Hey, everybody, thanks for joining in. This is a new midweek podcast that's going to be coming out some weeks. So the idea with this was that church is every day, and sometimes we think of church as just Sunday. But, you know, what happens between Monday and Saturday in the life of Eucharist? What are the other conversations going on, the other spaces where God is up to stuff in this community? And so I wanted to find a way to bring some of that to people who are listening in other places, or people in Hamilton, a part of Eucharist, who are just curious what else is going on. So this week, Jill and I are going to jump into a quick conversation, picking up on the sermon from Sunday, because there's a few things that maybe I wasn't as clear on or articulate about as I wish I was. And Jill is a great co-pastor who's going to help me sort that out. And we're going to just share a few more reflections. And then next week, I'm going to have an episode with two people about living rooms and small groups and missional communities in Eucharist. And I'm excited about that conversation. We just talked the other day about that, and I think you're going to like it. So yeah, hopefully every few weeks there'll be a new midweek podcast talking about church the rest of the week, and I hope that you at least don't hate them. All right, here is my conversation with my co-pastor, Jill Trites. We will be the body. This last week, if you're following the Eucharist podcast, I did a sermon on same-sex relationships and part of this nuanced sermon series. And tried my best, Jill, you can tell me how you feel this all went. I mean, I tried my best to articulate what I think Scripture might say on this topic and how that has kind of led me to a certain posture pastorally. And then trying to look at, by the end of the sermon, what does it look like not just for me to hold this pastorally, but for a community to make space for difference of opinions, diversity, but also to have a community that can make room for different kinds of practices. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So if anyone's listening to this and you haven't listened to the sermon, like go back 1 week or a couple days back and you'll see one called Same-Sex Relationships. Listen to that first. It's not a bad sermon. It's got some stuff to say. But I think that I was hoping this conversation, like you and I had both talked about how there were things that I said. There's nothing I said that I think I shouldn't have said.
Nope.
But there are things that should have been said mm-hmm. that either I ran out of time for, or I just got too excited and kind of, because there was emotion in it. And I thought like this should be like a non-emotional sermon, but turns out when you're talking about, you know, people and God and all these scriptures, like there's a lot of emotion. And I think that that also meant that there were things that should have been said or could have been said that weren't said, or things that were communicated that maybe weren't, there's a potential for it not to be heard in the way I was hoping it would be heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that my primary thing that I noticed was that I felt like you ran out of time. You just ran out of time.
It was 70 minutes.
And so I think if I was going to start us in a place to sort of begin again or to talk into a little more, it would be the conversation that we had at the end that was a bit of a, so now what? Or what does that mean for us? Or what does that mean for us as a community if we... how will we live this out in practice?
Mm-hmm. That's like, I didn't want to leave it vague. I didn't want to be, this is a sermon about what Kevin thinks. And then when people in our church say, so what does that look like tangibly? You know, I didn't want to leave that floating in the air.
Right.
Because I feel like I've heard a lot of sermons where how this hits like in people's lives is not talked about. And I feel like it's really, that's kind of an unfair thing to do. But I probably tried to do it too quickly.
Well, and I think that the assumption, having listened to the sermon, might be that there is kind of full accord across our community about that perspective.
Right.
Because I think that you certainly provided sort of that one perspective really clearly and well. I think that there one is left with this assumption that this is Eucharist's position on right. same-sex relationships. And I'm not sure that that is in fact the case.
No. And it's something, I mean, it's a thing where, and you mentioned this, that we do these table manners at the beginning, which is trying to set expectations.
Mm.
And it's one thing to do them in the first 5 minutes and another thing to hold those 60 minutes later when we're talking about stuff that like, I really don't want people to think, well, if Kevin thinks blank, then I must think blank. And if Kevin believes, reads these texts in this way, then I must read them the same, or everyone in that church must read them the same. Because that's a thing we've really tried to push against as a church, is that we have a difference between the positions that people in our church take, which may be diverse, and then the practices that we have together, which we need to have some sense of common practice if we're going to live a life together. Does that make sense?
Yeah, although I think that for you, this idea of position and practice are very clearly delineated in your head, and I'm not sure that other people necessarily would understand the nuance of that position and practice for you.
Right.
So I think it would be helpful actually for you to sort of flesh that out a little bit.
And if anyone's listening to this and you want to read more about this, we have a little ebook that we've made about how we hold theology as a church. It's called How We Believe. I think it's called Unity, Diversity, and the 1-2-3s of Theology. We've got a couple of zine copies of it at church on Sundays too. But you can get it if you go to eucharistchurch.ca/howwebelieve. It's actually in there as a PDF. And one of the case studies that we did in that is LGBTQ Christians and how does that work in our church. And that was largely stating what I said last Sunday in the sermon, but you know, not all at once and not out loud with passion and stuff. So I think it's a different case when we do that on a Sunday. But I'll try to tease out a bit of the difference between positions and practice. That being that I think in a lot of churches, there's this idea that if the pastor believes blank, like if this is his or her position, then the church's position is blank. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, or the other way around. If the church's position is blank, right, then the pastor's position must be blank. Because the pastor is hired by the church to tell the church the things that right. they want to hear.
And we talked about, it's true. We talked about at the end of the sermon, and this was something you had brought up with me earlier, the idea of fences versus centered. Mm. That, you know, there's a fence way of seeing faith, which is to get into the fold, you have to jump over the fence of belief, and that's all these doctrines. Versus a centered position of faith, which is Jesus is at the center, calling all of us from different perspectives and different positions towards him, where we meet each other and we meet God. And so we have worked as a church really hard to create a culture where people can hold a range of positions and they can hold them as well as they can. And that my job as a pastor, the job of anyone else in this community who's participating with people, is not to change their positions, but to help them hold those positions in as healthy a way as possible by calling them to Jesus. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think my hope was that I could do the practices then. Then the question is, how do you live life together? I think is then the question that comes out of that. So what do you do when you have mutual positions that can't coexist?
Mm-hmm.
So if you believe in an open communion table or a closed communion table,
mm-hmm.
you can't practice both.
Mm-hmm.
If you are in a believer baptism church, you probably can't practice infant baptism.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're an infant baptism church, you can maybe practice believer baptism. You got to dance around that. But, you know, some of these things are mutually exclusive. And so what we've tried to do as a church is figure out how can we have a common set of practices, ways that we live as a church community within a diversity of positions, which is kind of like that unity without uniformity. And so the way that we've done that on something like, I don't know, what's a good example? Sorry to throw you on the spot.
Well, I think like we've done on the open communion table or baptism or any of those sorts of things.
Sure.
Is that kind of
thing. Yeah, baptism is a good example where if somebody wanted to have their kid baptized, we don't do infant baptism
right.
because we're a CBOQ church and our denomination's position is believer baptism, which happens to line up with what I personally believe.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other things we do that don't perfectly line up with what I personally believe. So with baptism, we would say to a couple that wanted to have their child baptized, you know, let's go to the scriptures, walk us through why you get there, kind of help them sharpen their position. But at the end of the day, we would say, we're going to ask you to submit to this community because our practice is that we baptize believers. We
right.
don't baptize infants.
Okay.
So that's our shared practice. But it's not because you're wrong. It's not because you're sinful. It's not because you're stupid. It's just that that's not our practice.
Okay.
So we're asking you to lay aside or set aside your position, believing in infant baptism, in order to take part in this common practice with your community.
Okay.
So on Sunday,
so make that work here.
With same-sex marriage, what I was hoping to illustrate was that we are not a church where everyone agrees on the same position. We don't take a stance as a church of whether we are an affirming or a non-affirming church, to use some language, or progressive or conservative traditional. Or traditional or liberal or whatever. We're trying to erase those lines as the us versus them distinctives and saying, you know, just go to the church that agrees with what you believe. And we're trying to say we want to make a space for these people to coexist together in a way that sharpens all of us. And my hope with the sermon was to lay out, if you are wondering what I believe, here's how I get where I get biblically.
Right.
Because you should know that I'm going there through scripture, not just, you know, my own thoughts. And if you are traditional on this, my hope, and I didn't state this and I should have, is the best way to hold a traditional framework on marriage is not to go to these clobber verses. You know, and I went through those clobber verses. It would be to go to, and I didn't give examples. And if I had more time, I would have liked to, you know, give a little more example around what the best way to get to a traditional framework on marriage would be, which, you know, I've had some conversations with people. It might be going back to Genesis. It might be looking at Ephesians and the language of Christ and the church and male and female, the complementarity of differences that come together. And so there are really good ways to get there. But typically how people get there is they go to these six verses in the Bible and use them to attack same-sex couples. And so I was hoping to say, hey, that's not a good way to use these verses. I didn't lay out a different kind of position. And I wish that I did. I don't know if I had time to, but I think that's something that was missing from the sermon. My hope at the end of the sermon was to say, here's how I've arrived where I've arrived. You may arrive in a different place, and that might be more liberal or conservative than where I am. But how do we together as a community function knowing that we will have different perspectives on this? And how do I as a pastor, or you as a pastor, or anyone else in a pastoring role or anyone else in a leadership role, how do we function as a congregation knowing there are those differences? Does that make sense?
Right. So what would you say to people in our Eucharist community who hold those sort of who come to a more traditional interpretation of what the Bible says about this?
So I'd say we need you to hold that position with as much grace, love, biblical insights, charity as possible. So I'm not going to ask you to change your position. I would love it if you didn't get there through these clobber texts. I don't know if that's how people arrive there or not. But to try to say, okay, what are the best ways to hold this position? Why do I think the Bible teaches this? Why do I think this fits with the ethics of Jesus? How does this contrast and compare with maybe what Kevin believes or what Jill believes or what somebody else believes? And I would like it if they could hold that position with as much conviction as they have, but also with humility and love and charity, which is the same thing I would push to anyone on the more liberal side of this discussion. Really, it's the same expectations. And to say, we are asking all of you to be a part of a community where you won't agree with everyone else, but you set aside your convictions in order to serve and love one another. You still have those convictions, but you are willing to place them below serving and loving other people in this church.
But is there a place that doesn't work? So I know that there are people in this community and outside of this community who hold very traditional values around this, who do so with great care and concern and wisdom and love and honoring their biblical understanding as best they are able. And I come to a different place, but I recognize that, well, first of all, there's just the majority opinion. So there has to be something.
Well, and there's so many churches.
That.
I mean, what we're talking about here in many church contexts, in our church context, we probably, I don't know what the percentage is, but we probably have more people that would lean towards a more liberal perspective on this. You know, I'm not positive, but I think that in our church being traditional on this topic is probably a bit of a minority perspective. But in most churches, it would be the majority perspective. And so this can kind of swing both ways. I would actually encourage some people that maybe land in a more liberal place in a traditional setting to hold that conviction with charity and grace, but also to hold it firmly as what they believe.
Right. But I don't think that we want to silence that position at all. And I don't want,
right.
And I worry, and I have heard that sometimes when, you know, whenever you hold a minority opinion, suddenly your opinion becomes unwelcome and you feel like you don't have the freedom to express that opinion anymore.
Totally. And I know so many people in more traditional settings where they feel differently on women in leadership and they feel like, I can't talk about this. Mm-hmm. This is what the whole thing of the 1-2-3s, this difference between practice and position. This is my hope, is that you can talk about it with grace and charity, not abuse, not bigotry, but with grace and charity. You can wrestle with it. You can debate. You can work through it. And ultimately, whether or not you change your mind, you're going to come out looking more like Jesus and thinking more like Jesus because of the work you've done wrestling with people who disagree. And my whole hope with this is that we can have a community where people talk across these lines and no one feels like, I just have to shut up and keep my head down. But also you don't feel like, I just have to change that person's mind. You're saying, I'm going to sharpen this. It's like a seminary classroom, or when I was in my undergrad, like the best classrooms were where people could say, you know, here's what I think, here's what I think. And professors would even disagree with one another. And that would sharpen one another. There was a mutual respect across that disagreement.
Extent, that's always the difficulty with something that's presented in a sermon context.
Right, it's only one voice.
And in order for you to create that in a way that is cohesive and makes sense and rolls together well and so on, it requires you to put together kind of a sum total that maybe at the end felt a little like it was the last word.
And it's meant to be the first word, but I'm just a loud, passionate person. So it's going to sound a bit like, you know, this is the most important word because I'm yelling about it and I'm excited, but this has to be the first word. And then back to the practice thing quickly, if we can get to the place where people hold these diverse, and I'm always hesitant to use the holding diverse opinions because it has been used to be like, well, then, you know, something racist, you know, people hold bad, vicious opinions. And so we're not trying to make space for that, but there are ways to hold minority positions in any setting that are not degrading of any other person. Like, I think we have to believe that there's a way to hold this conviction without you harming someone. And that's always a tricky line. And how exactly as a church we make sure that people are holding positions with grace and charity and love and not, you know, anger or fear or bigotry or whatever. Like that's a real question. But that's also part of why I wanted to land somewhere in the sermon, was not to end it with this kind of vague idea that we're just all going to disagree.
Yeah.
And then someone says, well, would you marry my boyfriend and I? Or could we be leaders in the church? Could we teach Sunday school? Could we lead a Bible study? Like, I didn't want to leave it vague because I believe that clarity does matter, even if it's nuanced clarity, that we should be able to talk about how we function as communities and not leave it all floaty.
I think that's one of the difficulties that I have seen happening over the last few years with this whole sort of third way. I get holding third way kind of theoretically, but when theoretically we have to bring that into practice, often third way becomes first way.
It just becomes the same old thing. I mean, third way, if anyone listening doesn't know, is saying, and jump in if you've got a thought on it, like, there's a liberal and a conservative way, or there's like this position, whenever you've kind of got Democrat, Republican. We're third way, which means we refuse to ascribe completely with either side, and we want to find a way through the noise, which, back to an introduction to nuance, the first sermon I did in this series, is very much what Jesus is doing all the time. And it's trying to find a way through the noise to confront what needs to actually be confronted in the systems at play. And to, I think, usually to reach people on the margins, to welcome in those who are on the edge. Like, I think that's a lot of what we see Jesus doing when he cuts between Jesus is at A or B, and he kind of goes, oh, here's this other C, D, E, F, G way through. But in practice, when churches say we're a third way church and you dig in a little bit, often it is, well, we're a third way church on gender. Well, can women preach? Well, no, but we're third way. Mm-hmm. It can end up becoming just a way to dodge the difficult questions and to be unclear on your practices. Because I think third way is usually when a response to having a lot of different positions in a community. So that you say, oh, we're third way because we want to let people have different positions.
Right, and we're trying to sit in the middle of that somewhere.
Right, yeah. But our practices are usually leaning towards a pretty clear, easy answer.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can, I'm not going to try to excuse anything, but I'm going to try to articulate in a way that I wish I maybe had a bit more on Sunday, how our practices works.
Okay.
And maybe you can jump in and just police me as needed.
Okay.
So within Eucharist, the question is, what are the practices we're going to carry around same-sex marriage? Because that is kind of where the rubber hits the road on a topic like same-sex relationships in a church like ours. So the one question would be, would we perform a same-sex blessing or marriage? And I think that's kind of the default place a lot of people go on this topic. And so what I said in the sermon was, when somebody in the church comes to me as their pastor, I want to, about same-sex attraction or relationship, I want to walk with them as their pastor and as a spiritual director to help them go to the text, go to Jesus, enter into prayer, do discernment work. And if at the end of that, they feel called to celibacy, to not pursuing that relationship, I bless them in that. If at the end of that, they feel a freedom in their conscience and a desire to pursue that relationship, I will bless them in that journey as well and be there with them, pointing them to Jesus. And so that's kind of practically how that looks for me. And I think at that point, it's pretty easy because it's just about Kevin as a pastor. It doesn't really encroach on anyone else in our community. Right. The challenge, of course, is if that couple is dating and falls in love and wants to make a commitment to one another and a covenant within their church family, we're now drawn into something that is a little bit beyond just me as a person or as a pastor. And that's, does our community, or do we perform same-sex marriages or not? You know, do we bless that or do we not? And the positions are going to be diverse. And what we had discerned, we did this a couple of years ago with some conversations with the elders, and we're kind of always trying to keep discerning this, but the practice that we currently have is that we will allow a pastor to perform a same-sex blessing, not marriage, I'll get to ordination in a minute, but to perform a same-sex blessing for a couple that is a part of our congregation, provided the pastor's conscience is clear to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So here's where that works well, is that it allows the freedom for pastors in our context, or those who are ordained in our context, to perform these blessings following their conscience, providing that they've done the kind of biblical work that we want to see in our community, and provided that that couple is in relationship within our congregation. So there's a shared life that's happening. The challenge is that if you're not a person who's come to a position where you feel comfortable with that, it may feel like, oh, I'm being pushed into a community where these relationships are blessed, but maybe I don't find myself comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense as a tension?
Mm-hmm.
And this is why I would like us to use the language of our practices extend to this point. So it's not saying that everyone in our church would affirm this practice, but that our practices extend to this point. In the same way that we have people in our church who would believe that infant baptism is what the Bible teaches, but our practices don't extend to infant baptism. They extend to believer baptism. And so we ask people to participate in that, even though they land in a different place. But it's not because they suddenly stop believing in infant baptism, but because they want to be in a community of diversity.
Mm.
And so in the same way, we don't ask everyone in our church to affirm that wedding or that marriage. They certainly don't have to attend or stand or bless it as a person. And if their friends or family or home church say, you know, do you believe that God blesses same-sex marriages? You know, I think it's actually okay for you to say that's not where I'm at, but I'm part of a community whose practices extend to this place when a pastor's conscience is free to do so. And I think what's important in that, and what makes this third way and not just picking a side, is that if we had a pastor or a leader in our church or someone ordained who was not comfortable in their spirit or conscience to perform that wedding, we would not require them to do so. So I think a traditional affirming church, to use that language, would say you must, everyone in the church must affirm same-sex relationships, and any staff must affirm and perform weddings.
Right.
And a traditional church setting would be no one can affirm this.
Right.
You better not talk about it.
Right.
And no pastors or leaders are free to perform any kind of blessing. I think a third way posture here that we actually have is there's liberty for pastors to do this discernment and for congregants to do this discernment, but we will extend space for the practice to go to that degree should their conscience be free to do so. Jill, is that sufficiently a third way posture?
I think so. I think that makes sense to me.
I think it does.
I think that makes sense.
Does it make sense to you, dear listener? The ordination thing quickly, because in the sermon I said, I'm not ordained because they don't do that.
They don't do that.
That was just, I was just flying. I was having fun at that point. That was a great, it was a real beautiful week. But our denomination does ordain pastors. Our denomination does not allow an ordained pastor to perform a same-sex marriage or blessing. And so I personally, Kevin, decided to withdraw myself from the ordination process in order to not have to break any vows that I would be making within the ordination process. And at that time, I talked to some people in the CBOQ and explained why I was stopping the process of ordination so that I could be pastorally present to same-sex couples in our community who might want to be married. Jill, you can speak to your own journey, but you may decide to get ordained, in which case I assume you would not perform a same-sex blessing because you would want to honor the commitment you made to this denomination, or you may choose not to get ordained. I'm really putting you on the spot here.
I know.
Sorry. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I just thought it was an interesting...
We're just going
to
cut this part out.
I'm throwing it back at you.
No. I mean, I've been thinking about ordination, and I think that it's an interesting conundrum because obviously if I was to go ahead and be ordained and make that commitment to my... Then I would be required, obviously, right, to hold my commitment, and I wouldn't...
Break that.
Wouldn't want to break that. No. And so I would go ahead with that step knowing that that was a limit that I was putting on myself. Not necessarily because it's my
position, but because it's a
practice.
Oh, it works. See, everybody's already doing this.
Yeah.
This is why I'm fighting so hard for this dumb distinction between positions right. and practice, is that every church already makes a distinction. They just don't always know how to name it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every seminary, Bible college, camp, summer camp, they're all, the problem is that often they want everyone to have the same position as the practice.
Mm.
I think we should liberate Christians from having to agree on everything
mm-hmm.
and say, we need you to act in unity, not necessarily right. to and agree some, on
and,
everything.
Right. And sometimes that means that you're right. We allow ourselves to be guided by the larger practice, whether or not we necessarily hold it because we belong and because yep. we have to be part of and because we have to be family with and because some of those things.
And that requires discernment and nuance and real, it allows people to speak up voices of dissent without having to remove people from a community. Like, people say all sorts of stuff about our church that we're a part of because they feel this freedom that they're not going to be removed for criticizing. And I think that there's obviously space where abuse could come into this. But there's always room for abuse to come in, no matter how you frame something.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the benefits to this kind of model outweigh the negatives. Because otherwise we'd have to say, you know, not just on the same-sex sermon, but we've got gender in a couple weeks. We've got divorce. Those are just like marital ones. We've had technology. We've
got money.
Money. Like, then you've just got to say, listen, here's the rules. And every week in the sermon series would be, here's what the pastor thinks, which is what the congregation thinks. So either you agree and you stay, or you leave because you don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here's our views on hell and salvation and the rapture, you know, and it just would create a culture where, and we've seen this in denominations, you just shrink down in your disagreements, you know.
Right.
You got 10 people, they disagree, it's 5 and 5. Now it's right. 2 and 2. And I always joke that at the end it would just be me with myself. And I always like disagree with myself, so I'd have to get a sword out, cut myself in half to separate myself from myself. Like, it doesn't work. And I think that the creeds and the sacraments and the life of the church gives us this ability to be bonded together despite those differences, and to even let those differences sharpen us with one another.
Hmm. Is our practice mm-hmm. still open for discussion?
It's a good question. I mean, I think to some degree it always has to be open, unless we think we have pinned this down.
Mm.
Now, here I am going off. This is not stuff I've written or wrestled with to an extreme degree. But I would imagine that part of what we are doing as Eucharist is we are a missional congregation. So we're experimenting. We are on the edge of church. We are in a place where we're connecting with people that a lot of churches don't connect with.
Mm-hmm.
So part of our job is to missionally respond. And we see this in the Bible where, you know, they're coming across new situations like divorce in 1 Corinthians, which I mentioned in the first sermon, where they're going, gee, we've never seen this one before.
Mm-hmm.
What's the faithful response?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we are in that maybe more than some other congregations because we're a missional congregation. So we should constantly be praying and discerning and trying to figure out what is the faithful way forward. And as new information and new experiences come in, they should always be speaking back into the life of the church. I don't think that denominations should move as quickly as churches like us, because part of our job is to get out ahead of this stuff so that we can see what Jesus is doing and bring the stories back. And if those stories are, there's no life here, you know, we went down this road. I'm not talking specifically about LGBTQ, but whatever the road is mm-hmm. of missional, you know, we got rid of our building or whatever it is. Oh, there's no life here. Keep the buildings. Or if we go somewhere and we find, oh my gosh, there's so much fruit when you get rid of these constraints.
Mm-hmm.
We should go back and tell those stories.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we should always be open to changing. I think denominations and networks should always be as well. But I think they'll probably change slower than the missional arms of the church. Because if the church is one big body, we're like the hands in the darkness kind of reaching out, seeing what we hit so that we can report back to the wider body whether or not a place is a good direction to go. And so I think that part of this is our unique calling. And I wouldn't recommend that every church make quick moves and changes on whatever the topic of the day is that's important. I think that everyone should be open to the Spirit. And I think in cases like this, everybody should be reevaluating how this affects real human lives around questions like same-sex attraction. But I think that every church doesn't need to move at the same speed or in the same directions. Mm. And I think that that's maybe a little bit of what's a unique calling for communities like ours. Does that sound like heresy?
I don't know from heresy.
Anything else that you want to add into this?
No.
Can I mention, because I did say leadership being open to LGBTQ people, like we don't have a glass ceiling. And I think that that's a big question, and exactly what does that look like will always be a little live, because leadership questions in a community are always a little live. But what I wanted to say by that was someone's sexual or gender identity would never stop them from accessing some sort of role. It wouldn't be like, oh, you are blank or you've had this experience or whatever it is, you are not eligible. That doesn't mean that we're going to now say like, so it's open to anyone who's gay. You know, that's mm-hmm. not helpful, but it mm-hmm. would be the things we look for in anyone who is a leader, the fruit of the Spirit, spiritual maturity, how that person interacts with the rest of the congregation. Do they have the trust of the congregation that's required to enter into these leadership roles? And so there's always not just theological questions with leadership, but questions of character and questions of relational capacity and relational ability. And so I think that, you know, in a church of our size and the kind of community we're in, we still have the space to do relational discernment work with leadership. If you're a church of 10,000, maybe you just need this all pinned down to a T. But I think with us in our church, it's always questions. Even the newest elder round, we had people whose names came forward and we said, you know, I think they might be too good of friends with other people that are on this team. We've had that in all sorts of different teams in the church. And so leadership and boards and all these committees we've got floating around now, you know, that's always going to be a multifaceted question. But I wanted to make clear, and I felt it was important for the sake of clarity, to say that somebody's gender or sexual expression would never be a determinant in and of itself to anyone being at a level of leadership in our church.
Yeah, and I think that it's really taking it off the table as one of the issues, right? It's like the issue of gender. I mean, being a woman does not disqualify you. Being LGBTQ does not disqualify you. There are not things that disqualify you by your age, stage, sex, color, ethnicity, any of those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. The things that qualify or disqualify you are based on spiritual maturity and your relationship with God. And that again becomes one of those things where we're trying to bring people to the center and not watch the fences. Mm-hmm. And this is just saying that the fence isn't there, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we all get to the center at the same rate same time.
And part of the beauty of this whole thing, and I hope that this is coming through to people listening, is that the fundamental question for us as a church is, are people walking towards Jesus and one another or away? And what I like about this kind of model, and maybe this is like, I think I'm near the end of what we've got to say on this, is that we want to remove the barriers of people going towards Jesus. And those might be theological barriers or life experience barriers, whatever they are. And it's not that those things aren't real or important or that we shouldn't wrestle with them, but we want to create a community where all these people can go towards Jesus and where they can, as they encounter each other on the way to the table, they sharpen each other, they encourage one another, they serve one another, and that the barriers that our culture has, we don't have in the church. And part of this nuanced series for me, the kind of meta themes, is that when I go on Twitter or Facebook, I just see people picking a side and fighting the other side. Mm. You know, it's just, which side are you on? Conservative or liberal, Republican or Democrat? You know, kind of lay it out. And then these are your people. These are your enemies. Get in line. Attack the enemy. We are right. And what I really hope Nuance does is confronts all of us with, again, the plank in our own eye of saying, I have something to learn from these other people. I have something to learn from God. I have something to learn from Scripture. And so I'm going to constantly bring myself to a place of repentance to see what God is teaching me. And I'm going to trust that God is doing the same work in the other people that are coming to this table. Okay, wait, before we close up this podcast. Well, let's just end. Anything else you feel like ending with?
No.
Do you feel like we said everything? Anything burning on your heart, Jill?
No. And no, I mean, I've got...
When there's long silences in this podcast, just picture Jill staring off to the side.
No, I think that there is... There's lots of questions. There's still lots of things that we could talk about, but we don't need to do that here and now.
There are,
I mean, there's lots of questions like how do we decide what are the things that people get to determine in their own conscience and what don't we? What are the things that we get to
just be individuals making individual decisions? Because then how are we a part of a historic church and how are we part of a local church?
Right.
So yeah, there's one.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of idolatry in sexuality across the Western world. So there's another.
Right.
And there's major abuses with sexuality in the history of the church. Is another nuanced question. Do you have any other nuanced questions that they're out there that we're not going to touch on in this?
Right.
Time?
No, but I think that there are lots of them, and that's so the conversations many. That we need to have.
Yes. So what we're getting at is just listen, get married, get a job, tithe well.
Tithe a lot.
Tithe a lot. Keep your pants on. I don't know. We're just being silly at this point. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on this inaugural. I didn't know what to call it. I thought this one could be a jingle of like, the Nuance Series Continues. Jill, stop looking outside. Jill, can you sing the Nuance Series Continues?
No. What is that?
It's the Nuance song.